helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. The war of words around disinformation and its compatriots has probably been going on since Cain and Abel. Recently, though, it seems that this war has gone from a holding action to full-blown scorched earth in record time. I believe the reason is simple. Thanks to the internet and social media, ideas are no longer filtered by elitists and their organizations. You no longer have to wait to be told what others think you need to know. Today, you can get all sorts of information, often right from the source. And boy, does that make the elitist filters mad. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm so glad you could join us here today. You know, what's the old Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times. Well, we live in interesting times. And what's funny is the things that make life, in my mind, the best seem to be what most people are honked off about. Now, to me, the idea of trusting disinformation, it seems counterintuitive until you realize, well, what people call disinformation is often just information they don't like. It's the information they don't want you to have. And that tends to make me want to trust it even more. What am I talking about? Well, let me start with there was a panel discussion in Pennsylvania with the Secretary of State and others, and including there was a Beth Schwanke. She is the Pittsburgh Disinformation Lab Executive Director. I mean, that's an Orwellian title just to begin with. We have a disinformation lab. So during part of this forum, she was asked how to combat so-called misinformation and disinformation. Now, before I get into her answer, let me explain what I'm talking about. Now, disinformation is information that's wrong. Misinformation is information that's wrong. Disinformation is information you know to be wrong that you propagate for some nefarious end. So this is already a loaded question, but here's the biggest problem from that question. How do you define what is and is not misinformation and disinformation? Now, one of the things I try to do, because I get a lot of people making a lot of claims via email, posts on the website, comments on social media, and they make a lot of statements that they honestly believe are true. So anything that contradicts them, they would immediately assume to be disinformation or misinformation, which is why my first response, and I don't always do this, but I try, is to ask them, well, where's your proof? Where's the evidence that what you say is wrong? Sometimes it's really, really hard because about the 50th or 60th time, you have to answer the fact that the United States is not a private corporation. It gets hard to ask people, well, where's your evidence? Because they almost always come up with one of two things. One is what's called the Incorporation Act of 1871, which, if you actually read it, creates a municipal corporation to create a government for the city of Washington, D.C. The other is, I don't remember, I think it's Title 15, Section 3002 of the United States law, which says in this chapter, the United States could be a federal corporation or an agency or department. Now, it doesn't say the United States is a corporation. It says when we use it in this chapter about repaying debts to the federal government, the United States means a federal corporation, not the federal corporation, a federal corporation. Let me get back on track. See, you hear the same evidence that doesn't prove what people say it does over and over again. It gets frustrating. But I try to ask, before you answer that, who defines what is true and not true? What is it based on? Because that has to be the fundamental question. Misinformation and disinformation are supposedly defined on what is truth. The problem is we've had a couple of generations raised on the idea that Well, truth is individual. There's your truth and my truth, and they don't have to match anything that actually exists in the real world. Now, back to Ms. Schwanke's response. So she said, when you see misinformation, it's best not to engage with it online because you're helping to amplify it. Okay, but how do you know it's misinformation if you don't know the evidence that either proves it to be true or untrue? She went on, she said, one thing everyone can do to make sure they are seeing accurate information is to use trusted sources. All right, problem number two, the sources that we have in this country are not trusted because they have proven themselves not to be trustworthy, meaning they've been proven to lie to us so long, so often that they can't be trusted. I'm sorry, there are no more trusted sources. People may trust them, but that's fooling themselves because, you know, it's the, was it the boy who cried wolf? How many times can they lie to you before you simply stop trusting them? So what are these trusted resources that Ms. Schwanke is referring to? She said, so in elections, that means using the Department of State. That means using your county elections office. It means using, and again, so far, okay, if you're talking about the election processes and rules, right? She goes on to say, it means using media organizations that follow, that adhere to professional journalism standards, like your local NPR affiliate. Well, you see, that's the problem. Media organizations don't follow professional journalism standards, not even the vaunted NPR. They show themselves to be biased. Therefore, they're not following professional journalism standards. They've shown themselves to place opinion in news articles without identifying it. That is a violation of professional journalism standards. They've been shown to suppress information in these articles that don't support their agenda. That is not a professional journalism standard. Therefore, there are no trusted resources as she defines them when it comes to the media. In fact, as Jefferson put it, he said, nothing can now be believed which is seen in a newspaper. Truth itself becomes suspicious by being put into that polluted vehicle. That's where media is today. And again, apparently that's nothing new. I don't know when Jefferson said this, but it's got to be, what, late 1700s, early 1800s? I mean, he was dead by... was it 1826? He died in 1826. Way back then, nothing could be trusted was put in such a polluted vehicle. But listen to this. This is the line that really got me. And it doesn't mean, you know, doing your own research and just asking questions and sharing. You know, posts from, I don't know, in my case, it's Uncle Joe, right? It means being thoughtful about where your sources are coming from, which is exactly what she's telling us not to do. She says, trust the media, not be thoughtful about where you trust. Just trust the people I tell you to. And that to me is the problem. Because the media sources that she claims are following journalism standards have been lying to us for decades. And now we have the proof. We had the proof that, the claim that, the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation, that Donald Trump was conspiring with the Russians to steal the 2020 election, or the 2016 election, that go on and on, right? That the mRNA vaccines would stop COVID in its tracks. And once you took the shot, you could not get COVID and not spread it. All these lies were propagated by those supposedly professional journalism standards. Now, compare that to what I say. Now, granted, my standard takes work. The answer is you trust nothing. There are four standards that I look for, four steps to standard. First is recognizing it's only an opinion until there's proof. I don't care where you get the information from. If someone says something is true, I don't believe it till they prove it to me. Now, yes, if it agrees with me, I'm going to tend to want to agree with it. But I have to fight that and say, no, it's I need proof that what I'm saying is true. Number two, An expert opinion is still only an opinion until there's proof. Experts get things wrong all the time. Experts once said the world was flat. Experts once said that the sun revolved around the earth. Experts once said it was physically impossible to go faster than the speed of sound. Experts once said it was impossible to take a rocket to the moon. Experts only have a certain level of knowledge, and they're human. They can make mistakes. I'm not saying experts don't have a value, right? Because experts can help explain what you see is true. For example, I had somebody just contacted me the other day. They were reading something in the First Amendment, and they asked me to explain, to give an example. Can I help explain to them what it's meant by this statement? And I'm more than happy to. That's me using my expertise. But it's not true because I say it's true. It's true because I point to documentation that shows that it's true. Was it number three? You have to, original sources are bust. You want to go to the source. When someone tells you that, I'll go back to the Incorporation Act of 1871 because I was dealing with that again earlier today. Right? When someone tells you that document established the United States as a private corporation, go and read the document. We live in an amazing time. The wealth of human knowledge is available in a few keystrokes. It doesn't take long to do a search and find the Incorporation Act of 1871 and then read it and realize that the very title of it is to establish a government for the city of Washington, D.C. It's not that hard. It does take a little more work, but it's not that hard, which leads you to the fourth one, and that is always check your own facts. Check your own assumptions. I've had examples where someone has come to me with a statement that challenged my assumptions, it challenged what I had known. They provided evidence, and I had to change that. By the way, that's exactly the opposite of what this person is doing. It says, don't double check their facts. Don't see if what they're saying is true. Simply trust them because they claim to be trustworthy. And whatever you do, don't check their facts. And what's interesting, if you think about it, there's a couple really dangerous points in there. First, if all you're going to do is believe whatever you're told by certain quote-unquote trusted sources, you don't think for yourself. It's funny, back when I used to teach Sunday school, I was teaching high school Sunday school class, and I would always ask them why. I started every year with it, where I would tell them the most difficult question I will ever ask you is why. It's not whether or not what you believe is correct or not. It's I want to know why you believe that. Is it something you found out, or is it something you're just regurgitating that's something from someone else? Is it your belief, or is it somebody else's belief? You'd be surprised how many of our fundamental religious beliefs are actually somebody else's beliefs that we're just parroting. So I want to know why. But there's another fundamental issue here. And again, I go back to Orwell's 1984. You've got real speak and you've got good speak. In other words, if I'm supposed to say this because you say I'm supposed to say this versus what is actually true, well, that leaves us in a very controlled position. It means your language it violates the basic idea of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. It violates the sovereignty we have over our own thoughts. We're not allowed to think for ourselves. We are to be told what we're to think. Now, I think this makes sense because if you look at the way our government-run schools are set up, that's pretty much what they do. They don't teach children to think. They teach them, here's what to think. Not to figure it out for yourselves, but to think what you're told. And I see that a lot in a lot of the discussions today. I remember I was a senior in high school. I was taking a physics class because I needed a science credit to graduate. And I'll give you the short version. We were doing it. The teacher had come in and we were doing an experiment and he asked a question. And it was a 50-50 shot, right? It was yes or no. So I raised my hand and he called on me and I said, yes. And he said, why? Oh, that infamous why question. Why is it true? The best part, the reason I remember this question above so many others, is because when I didn't have the answer right off the bat and other students started raising their hands, they said, no, give him a moment to think. Let him think. Let him analyze. Let him think for himself and see if he can come up with a reason why. I did. It was a physics question. This is by no means, you know, an epiphanal moment from the standpoint of the question that was asked. It was that I was given the opportunity to think for myself, and by using that, I was able to come up to the answer, the correct answer, the answer that was true in the real world. I think we need more of that, ladies and gentlemen, not less. And I'll give you some examples of that, but first, I have to take a break. Now, before I go, here's an interesting question for you. Do you realize your body has a built-in defense against disease? Now, sometimes it needs some help. We do a lot of damage from the environment, what we eat, how we treat our bodies, that decreases our immune system. But there are also things we do that boost the immune system. One of them is Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost. It has over a dozen supplements in a single travel-ready gel pack designed to boost your immune system. Now, I don't know about you, but when I travel, especially if I've traveled for long periods of time, I'm more likely to get sick. And I'm always trying to find a way to help boost my immune system during those times. Now I use Immune Super Boost. Again, they come in a travel-ready gel pack, so I just throw a few of them in my bag before I leave. And then every morning I take one and I avoid what I call the conference crud. The travel sickness, what do we always get? Now listen, because you are an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order of Immune Super Boost or anything from Healthy Cell. Find out more at AmericaOutloud.shop. Just find the ad for Immune Super Boost. It'll take you to the Healthy Cell's website. Put your order together. They have a lot of great products. But be sure to use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. As a thank you, they give you 25% off your first order.
Million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Joint Health and Mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Clean, pure, with premium ingredients, Global Healing's Pure Plant Protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with Pure Plant Protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, and today we're talking about trusting disinformation, because the disinformation is being defined not as what is true or not, but based on what the current political correct statement is. Interesting. I saw this quote from Representative Waltz. He's from Florida. He said, "We've had this narrative the last couple of years that the military has this growing and dire problem of white supremacy and extremism within it." Now, that's the trusted sources that our friend from Pennsylvania was telling us. Was it Ms. Schwanke? That there's, you know, the trusted sources are telling us that there is a dire problem of white supremacy. Now, Mr. Walls said he wanted data. He said, "I've repeatedly said that we have very little data to back that up." So what happened? Well, the RAND Corporation did a survey of about 1,000 veterans. Again, this was apparently designed to see, to correlate not just with people outside of the military, but people inside of the military. And the authors acknowledge that there have to be some limits to the results about, let's face it, are people going to be honest about their quote-unquote extremist standards? Now, I'm reading this from the Military Times, so this line was great. It said, "It did show that about a third of veterans surveyed believe in the Great Replacement conspiracy theory that people of color are being allowed to enter the U.S. to upend the white white majority." Now, I find it interesting the way they place it as a conspiracy theory, because when it comes to why are the borders open, why are the people letting people illegally enter this country as an attempt to upset the quote-unquote the white majority, I've actually heard very little people talking about that. What I have seen is Democrats talking about a demographic destiny and how their position will be reinforced as more people from overseas come in. But I want to get a little deeper into this. So the survey specifically asked respondents whether they supported white supremacy, black nationalism, the neo-Nazi Proud Boys, or Antifa, which they list as a far-left anti-fascist group. Now, just 1% of these respondents said they supported white supremacists. Antifa saw a 5.5% support among the group. Now, it's interesting because RAND then compared those results to a survey from Morning Consult of about 2,000 registered voters that found 7% support white supremacy and 10% support Antifa. In fact, the report went on to say, "We did not find evidence of veterans having a higher prevalence rate for extremism. He said, in fact, they are least up, they at least appear to have lower risk, particularly supporting support for groups like Antifa and Proud Boys and the KKK, as well as QAnon views." He didn't make any comment about the Great Replacement theory, but isn't that interesting? The report went on to say that the veterans' belief in far-right conspiracy theory, QAnon, were also less than the general population, at 13.5% for the veterans, compared to about 17% of Americans overall, based on the 2022 American Values Survey of 2,500 people by the Public Religion Research Institute. Now, isn't this interesting? We have the trusted sources promoting an idea that white supremacy and extremism are on the rise among the military, but the actual facts and data tend to show otherwise. And again, there are limits to this based on the questions and how they're asked and all that. But again, I have to ask Ms. Schwanke, should I trust the trusted resources when actual facts and data show them, if not completely wrong, at least their assumptions to be questionable? Okay, let's switch gears just a little bit. How many of you have heard of the Uniform Commercial Code? You might have heard mention of it when they were talking about having merchant codes and other things, but I'm talking about the Uniform Commercial Code. See, the Uniform Law Commission is an organization that drafts sample legislation that the states tend to adopt. It's kind of it's a short circuit, right? You're a state legislature, which means you're probably not a full-time legislator. You've got a life to live. You've got a real job to do. And rather than go through all of this, the Uniform Law Commission creates the Uniform Commercial Code, which is designed to easily be adopted by all the states. And again, is a generally not a bad idea, you know, that the laws about commerce shouldn't change from one state to another, right? But I think they're getting a little too big for their britches. And the problem is, I think way too many of our state legislators are simply taking what this Uniform Law Commission is putting out and not actually looking at the details. And what brought this to mind is I heard somebody talking about the Model Public Health Emergency Authority Act. Now, I've only gone through this a little bit, right? I haven't done a deep dive into it, but I did go through it. And what happens, they've got a committee that kind of puts together this draft legislation, and they send it to the states going, here's a model for you to deal with. And of course, being a nice, quick, easy shortcut, a lot of states, I understand, tend to adopt these laws. Now, again, this is an effect of COVID-19, and I think it's a situation where the medicine may be worse than the disease. See, during COVID-19, a lot of states violated their own constitutions, the Constitution of the United States. They violated the laws and caused a lot of havoc. So the idea, as I understand from this, is let's put together a uniform set of rules that we can all agree to. The problem is these uniform rules basically say, yeah, the governor I'm actually reading from the draft, the model. This act creates the exclusive emergency authority for the governor and any state or local official or agency to which the governor has delegated authority to respond to a public health emergency. Do you really want your governor having exclusive authority to declare a public health emergency? It goes in and says the governor may by executive order in a record issue a declaration of public health emergency if immediate action is appropriate to eliminate or reduce a risk of harm posed by the public health emergency. Well, how long do you really have we already heard people referring to gun violence as a public health emergency? Climate change is a government health emergency. Do you really want a governor to be able to say, you know what? I think this gun violence is a public health emergency. I think climate change is a public health emergency. Therefore, I'm declaring an emergency and I get to run roughshod over pretty much the rule of law and the Constitution. Because look at what the governor is supposed to be able to do once he or she has issued a public health emergency. They can pretty much issue an order to dealing with the acquisition, stockpiling, hoarding, commandeering, distribution, management, or use of drugs, devices, equipment, or tests, the acquisition, allocation, distribution, management, or spending of authorized funds, zoning, operations, commandeering, management, or use of building, shelter, facility, parks, outdoor spaces, or other physical spaces, and the management of the activities in those places, testing, isolation, quarantine, movement, gathering, evacuation, or relocation of individuals, testing, isolation, quarantining, culling, movement, evacuation, relocation, or management of plants or animals, management of state executive branch offices, agencies, and programs, surveillance, monitoring, or assessment of the public health emergency or any of its effects, suspension of a provision of any statute, order, rule, or regulation if strict compliance would hinder efforts to respond to the public health emergency or pose undue hardship, access to and security of electronic communications in supportive activities, including commerce, employment, education, notification, and warnings. Assessment of and response to the nature, degree, and variation of harm related to public health emergency, including the need for food, clothing, housing, and other necessities of life. Acquisition, allocation, distribution, or management of goods, services, equipment, material, or personnel. And it goes on and on and on. Basically, it says if a governor declares a public health emergency, they're the king. They can do whatever they want, just about whatever they want. And you go, well, you know, come on, there's got to be some. No, there's no legislative oversight of this. There is some role for the courts. It does say that a declaration of public health emergency or part of the public health emergency order is subject to review as an executive order under other laws of the state. But guess what? It also says that there is no private right of action, meaning they don't think you have the right to sue if you think the governor or any of his agencies have gone too far. Now let me ask you, how happy are you with the idea of your governor simply being able to declare and renew a public health emergency all on their own, without any oversight, without any control? Sure, if you have a good governor, I could see this being used rightly and properly. But what if you don't have a good governor? What if you have a Kathy Hochul or a Governor Newsom? I mean, do you really think they would not abuse? They were already shown to abuse their powers as even create powers they didn't have as governor. So let me ask you, I posted a link to the document in the show page. What do you think your state legislators are going to do? Are they going to adopt this? Just imagine how this could easily be. Imagine this in the hands of your worst political foe. And then ask me, and then tell me, I should say, do you think this is a good idea? Imagine your worst political enemy having this power. Would you be comfortable with that? The answer is no, then this should not be passed in any way, shape, or form. Yet Ms. Schwanke implies that because the Uniform Law Commission, is a trusted source, we should just believe them and do whatever it is they say. That's the express lane to tyranny, to despotism, ladies and gentlemen. We've already seen the damage done by the despotic acts of many of our governors during the COVID scamdemic. What do you think happens when they turn that into law? What do you think happens when governors now have this power over public health emergencies? What about other emergencies? Because I want to show you, I should probably show this before, but I'm reading from some of the preliminary notes, the prefatory notes to this legislation. It reads, under long established legal precedent, in other words, and not based on the law, based on what courts have said, it says each state has the police power to protect the health, safety, and welfare of its population. Jacobson v. Massachusetts is what they're basing it on. This is a sovereign power that was not delegated to the federal government under the federal constitution when the republic was formed. State governments rely on police power to protect public health in both normal and emergency times. The police power is broad, encompassing a wide variety of public health measures. Thus, it is the foundation for state statutes and regulations that authorize executive branch agencies and officials to quarantine and isolate people and to take any or all of these actions reasonably necessary to prevent inspection or of infectious diseases. For example, in the seminal case, Jacobson v. Massachusetts, the Supreme Court of the United States held the authority of an executive branch agency for the city of Cambridge to require individuals under state legislation to be vaccinated when necessary for the public health or safety. I've read Jacobson v. Massachusetts. That is not what the Supreme Court said. What the Supreme Court said, they said it was reasonable for the city of Cambridge when dealing with an individual who had gotten off of a ship that I believe involved smallpox, to either require isolation, vaccination, or to pay a $5 fine. That's what the court said. But again, we're not worried about what the actual law, we're not worried about the law. None of this is dealing with the law. This is dealing with what courts have said in the past. Do you really think people who can't tell the difference between the law and what courts have said have your best interest in that? So misstate the case of Jacobson versus Massachusetts, that they're going to be the ones protecting your rights? Somehow, I don't think so. So I tell you now, more than ever, we need to be engaged with what our state legislators, our governors, even our local officials are doing, because if they're listening to this inaccurate information that's being called truth, they're going to make decisions that are really going to harm us in the future. It's also why now, more than ever, we need to be supporting the agenda of freedom, the agenda of rights and liberties, not just in the political realm. We should be buying from companies that believe what you and I believe, that more now than ever, we need to vote with our dollars. That's why I partnered with Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. I was their customer before I was their partner, because they have the best 4G, 5G coverage on all the networks, on all the towers that the major carriers use. They have great U.S.-based customer support. Their plans are not only affordable, but don't really make a mess of things if you go over that month's plan. Best of all, they support organizations like the Sanctity of Life, veterans, first responders, and those protecting your religious and constitutionally protected rights, like the Constitution Study. So please switch to Patriot Mobile now. You can get free activation if you use the offer code CONSTITUTION. Go to patriotmobile.com/constitution, find a plan, use that promo code CONSTITUTION to get free activation. While you're at it, why don't you join me every day on AmericaOutloud.news? Find stories, find articles, find things that really talk to you. They explain something, that you find it important. But don't just keep it. No, ladies and gentlemen, we have to share this information. We have to let other people know that what they're getting may be wrong, may not be true. We do that not by suppressing speech, but by promoting more speech, by sharing this information. That, ladies and gentlemen, you want to secure the blessings of liberty, like your freedom of speech and press? You do that by sharing the information that the censors don't want other people to know.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news. A place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, and today we are trusting in disinformation, or at least what the supposed trusted sources tells us is disinformation. Anybody remember how we were told by the media, by election officials, by the very people that Ms. Schwanke said we should trust, that the 2020 election was the most trustworthy election, the most honest election that had ever existed? Well, now the facts and data prove otherwise. During the trial, the disbarment trial of Jeffrey Clark, a former DOJ official under Trump, by the way, a trial that he's being charged because he's being disciplined for drafting a letter that was never actually sent to the officials of Georgia, advising them of their options of dealing with election irregularities. In the second week of testimony, a retired IT professional, Garland Favorato, of the Election Integrity Group Voter Georgia, resumed testimony that he's been giving in this case. Now, he was discussing a Georgia legislative subcommittee meeting which looked into fraud in the 2020 election. One of these committees found in what became known as the Ligon report that in early December 2020, that the election was so fraught with irregularities that it should never have been certified. Favorito said that he was concerned about a video from State Farm Arena showing polling workers taking out ballots stored underneath a table and counting them after observers had gone home. He also stated that the room was curved, so when he was an observer, he could not see around the corner, which violated transparency laws. He also said he believed putting the ballots under tables violated transparency laws as well. He also said that stopping the counting and then restarting violated other Georgia statutes. He also pointed out that in his 40-year career, having an audit where the chain of custody was broken was unheard of. He also pointed out that in Floyd County, 2,700 ballots from urban locations were stuck in adjudication, yet the text could not explain why. Now, finally, they simply reran the ballots and got accurate results. Interesting enough, Floyd County went very heavily for Trump in 2020. Mr. Favorito also discussed a second machine count done after the election in Fulton County. This is, by the way, had 17,000 new votes that he said seemed to come out of nowhere in an attempt to correct the report the officials had provided that seemed to come up 17,000 votes short. Apparently, no explanation has ever been given for where these votes came from. And his testimony goes on and on and on and on. So when the so-called trusted sources are lying to you, when they are giving you information that is not true, the definition of misinformation, why should we simply trust them to give us information? The answer is you should. You never should. I believe every election should be audited to check to see if there are any problems so you can learn from them and deal with them properly. But we're told not to do that. Just listen to the experts, listen to the people, and everything will be fine. What about in Wisconsin, where the governor is in favor of adding more and more drop boxes? Well, if you bothered watching the movie 2000 Mules, you'll see drop boxes. Well, put it this way. Originally, the Wisconsin Supreme Court said drop boxes needed to be in where the election officials were. so that the they were only be handled by authorized election officials, not picked up by other people and mailed. But then they kind of backtracked on that. Now it's like, well, it's up to the local judges. They can decide whether or not there should be drop boxes. We have evidence that drop boxes in unsecured locations are dangerous, at least to the accuracy of an election. And even if they are in these areas, there's no enforcement of how many ballots are placed in there. But we're supposed to believe the quote-unquote trusted sources that everything will be fine. We'll put the decision about drop boxes in the hands of, well, we'll just call them left-wing courts. And we'll let them decide where to put these and how they'll be handled. Putting your vote at risk. Can your vote be canceled because of some of these? Drop boxes played a big role in Biden's victory in 2020. Could it be that the Wisconsin governor, who also happens to be a member of the Democratic Party, is promoting these election drop boxes because they favored his party's champion for president in the last election? Or how many of you remember the Inflation Reduction Act, which turned out to be the Green New Deal with a different label, where almost all the money went towards climate change agenda initiatives and very, very little went to actually doing anything about inflation? Well, here's an interesting little twist. Under the IRA, the EPA created the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, and it funded it with $27 billion. Now, of the $20 billion that's already been doled out, $7 billion went to Climate United, $5 billion went to the Coalition for Green Capital, and $2 billion went to Power Forward Communities. Now, it's interesting, all these free organizations have in common is they're planning on spending at least half of their, quote-unquote, investments. They call it investments. What I call it is embezzlement. But they're going to put them to low-income and disadvantaged communities. And that sounds great. Of course, it's also interesting that it's part of Joe Biden administration's, quote-unquote, Justice 40 that wants to make sure that 40% of these of this money goes to communities that traditionally support the Democratic Party. Not because he's trying to purchase their votes. Oh, no. This is all about environmental justice. Do you believe that? Now, I admit there's not a smoking gun proof that this money has been stolen from the American people to help improve Joe Biden's election possibilities in November. But does anybody else remember Joe Biden's executive order telling all executive agencies to do all they can to get voters registered and get out the vote primarily in Democratic strongholds? Anybody else remember that? Do we think that isn't happening now? Do you really trust the quote-unquote trusted sources that have been proven, shown by evidence to be lying to us, to be telling us the truth now when they say, oh, no, it's just a coincidence. They're not actually trying to use the federal government to influence your votes. No. They're not trying to use money that was illegally appropriated for the American people to help encourage communities that tend to vote towards one party more than the other. I'm sorry, it does kind of beg credulity, which brings us back to the original premise. Who do you trust and why? Who defines what is disinformation and misinformation? Who is the ultimate decider? Now, the amazing thing about a republic, about a free country, is you're free. You get to make up your own mind. You get to choose based on the evidence you bother to investigate. And if you aren't the one choosing, in other words, if you simply say, I'm going to trust, I heard it in the news, they wouldn't lie to me. I heard it from a government actor, they wouldn't lie to me. I heard it from pick whatever, they wouldn't lie to me. Then you have chosen to let someone else choose for you. You have voluntarily given up your right to find out the truth. Reminds me a little bit of something that Benjamin Franklin said. He who will give up essential liberties for the promise of temporary safety deserves neither liberty nor safety. Well, if you're willing to give up your right to find out the truth, just for the convenience of having somebody else do the work for you, do you truly deserve these rights? Because look at it this way. If someone else is deciding for you, how free are you? Imagine you're Charlie Brown. And there's Lucy with that football. And no matter how many times she yanks the football away at the last minute, so you go kicking off of the air and get hurt, you do it over and over and over again. Each time she does it to you, each time she lies to you and says she's not going to do it this time, you go ahead and do it again. That's pretty much what Einstein defined as insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. Again, we live in a tremendous time. This age is the first time you had a practical way in real time to double check what you're being told, to look to the evidence and find out if it's true, to demand the evidence before you support something. Why don't we exercise it more often? Sure, there are a lot of people complaining about what social media has done to this society. It's made us more antisocial than ever. Fine. But it also allows us to find out information from other people, people around the world. It means that when someone tells me that there were no problems in the 2020 election, guess what? Somebody found problems in the election. And rather than this being a local story that goes nowhere, it's available on the internet. It's interesting because I'm actually reading a story about the Georgia election in a Tennessee newspaper on their online edition, so I can find out and then go in and double check what they're saying. Is that not awesome? Is that not a power I think we should not only embrace but encourage? Sure, there are going to be people that disagree with us all the time. I don't mind people disagreeing as long as they come up with evidence. Actually, I request two things. One, that they provide evidence for what they say. And two, that when you look at that, when both of us look at that evidence, we look at what the evidence says, not what they want it to say. There's a lot of problem with that. Because we're dealing with a lot of stupid people. I'm not trying to use it as a pejorative. The idea is stupid, unwilling to look at the evidence. Bonhoeffer wrote a paper called The Theory of Stupidity. He said, against stupidity, we are defenseless. Neither protest nor the use of force accomplish anything here. Reason falls on deaf ears. Facts that contradict one's prejudgment simply need not be believed. In such moments, the stupid person even becomes critical. And when facts are irrefutable, they are just pushed aside as inconsequential and incidental. You see, I don't mind having a disagreement and a debate with somebody that at least is willing to look at the facts and data and deal with what's in front of them. The person, you know, the Charlie Brown continually going after that football when the evidence proves that he's most likely gonna be hurt again. That's a stupid person. The person that looks at a piece of legislation and still claims it says what it patently doesn't say. or who looks at an opinion of a court and says it says what it patently doesn't say. I see it all the time. But by exposing people to facts and data, we do two things. We can weed out those who are stupid, who are unwilling to change their mind, regardless of the facts and data you show them. You know, they tell you that the sky is green, regardless of all the pictures you take, regardless of walking outside. If they're going to say that, they're stupid, as the Bible refers to them, they're fools. We simply should just let them go play their foolish games. But we also find the people that are not stupid, that are not the fool, that look at this and go, wow, I never thought of that. Let's discuss this. Let's see how this impacts our lives. Let's see what we can learn from this. Let's actually use the scientific method. When you have a hypothesis and you design a test and you test your hypothesis, let's look at the actual outcome, decide, and then change the hypothesis to find the truth rather than changing the test to support a hypothesis that isn't true. You see, if I have a choice between trusting the quote-unquote trusted sources that Ms. Schwenke was talking about, or the proven sources that she calls disinformation, I'll take the disinformation every time. If you have a question about what I've been talking about today, or anything related to the Constitution, or the Constitution study, ask it, please. I'm actually looking for more questions. I want to do a Q&A segment. I need more questions. Just go to constitutionstudy.com/questions and fill out the form. You can also find the Ask a Question button on the homepage at constitutionstudy.com. I get a few more questions, and I'll have a Q&A segment. And most of all, don't be afraid of asking questions. You may think it's a stupid question, but I bet you there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there that are curious about the same. They have the very same question. I also hope you come back and join us here for the Constitution Study every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't listen then, all the episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on talk radio. You can listen on your favorite podcast app, but subscribe to the show. Leave us ratings and reviews. It helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. You can find all the links you need at the homepage on AmericaOutloud.news. But as with everything else, please don't keep this to yourself. Share this information. Share the ideas of freedom of speech and press, and share the blessings of liberty.